Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN on this Thursday afternoon. All right, a lot to talk about today, but I want to jump right in. We don't have as much time as I'd like here in this first segment. And maybe you are a child of an elderly parent worried about caring for them and looking for in-home care and things like that. It seems like the elderly and tech is this area that is booming now. And a couple of guys who would probably agree with me are Ross Kimborowski and Bruce Masterson. They're the co-founders of a business, an app called Respect. Welcome, both of you, men. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Great to be here.
So who's going to start here? Explain for me, Ross. Ross, you're going to go?
Sure.
Explain for me what Respect is.
So we wanted to reimagine the home care industry. Both Bruce and I had experiences with our loved ones, Bruce with his parents and in-laws, me with my grandfather, in looking for some short-term and long-term care. And we were very frustrated, as most of the public is. It's a big problem. So in the next 25 years, the number of elderly over 65 will more than double.
Right.
And there are over 34 million caregivers. So we wanted to do something different. We wanted to reimagine this for both sides, both for clients looking for help and for caregivers. For clients, we wanted to set different standards for care. So, for example, the caregivers that we hire are more experienced. They are typically over 90% of them have some kind of a certification, like a home health aide. Our standards are far more strict than the rest of the industry, in part because we wanted to deliver quality. We also leverage technology. So this is what we've done in the past. And we wanted to find a way to help get technology to help us deliver that care.
Let's talk tech. Well, how is it that tech is influencing this, or how do you use tech?
We use tech really to give us an advantage over the ability to communicate and the ability to help everyone keep in touch. So whether your mom lives next door or lives across the country, you're able to see things like the care log that's done at the end of every day that tells you what the caregiver did and how your mom is doing. You're able to see that at the end of every day electronically, so we ship that back.
This must be a pretty competitive field, is it? I mean,
it is a competitive field, so there are tens of thousands of agencies around the country. But if you look at the actual statistics, so caregivers are underpaid, clients are very unhappy with their care, and ultimately that results in a lot of frustration from both sides.
One of the things you guys say, though, is that you pay the caregivers more, 20 to 30% more.
We do.
Are you more expensive?
No, we actually are pretty competitive with the market. The reason we're able to pay them more is in looking to reimagine the market, we leverage technology and get rid of things that were not helping with the quality of care. And so we were able to reduce our costs, and rather than pocket those costs, we're passing them on to caregivers. So by paying 20 to 30% more, we can be far more demanding in terms of qualifications, and people are happier because they are paid more.
I've had family members go through this on either side, really. And let me put this in a respectful way. But, you know, sometimes you say, well, we need, and then you come up with an ethnicity. We need a Polish lady, or we need a Romanian lady, or someone to come in and live, right? And so those people, while they're helpful and they're affordable, aren't necessarily, well, they've got hearts, and they're caregivers in that way, but might not be so trained. So, I mean, how do you fit with that? How do you answer people who say, well, we're just going to hire this woman?
Typically, we'll have a good conversation with them about there are a number of risks in doing that, making that kind of a hire. One is that we have very high levels of insurance for liability. We have backup. So let's say the caregiver can't be there. They're sick or they have a family problem. We'll have a fill-in that will come in and take care of things. We monitor the quality. We do all the background checks. We do a 7-year background check for every county they've lived in. We do drug and alcohol screens, random drug and alcohol screens. There's just a lot more supervision and process around it that makes sure that
I would imagine if you're paying them 20 to 30% more, the caregivers want to work with you, right?
Yes, I mean, our retention rates are higher than the average. The retention rate typically in this business is somewhere around the average life is about 6 months. We're keeping our caregivers way longer than that.
You described the fact that the system is broken on either side, and that just, I mean, it seems so true to me. I'm interested, obviously, in the elderly, but in these caregivers as well, for them to find an avenue that works well for them. All right, so how does it work? You might hire someone long-term, right? Do you live-in? Do you do, like, vacation stop? You know, someone's going to be on vacation, they can just stop in from time to time?
Yes. So you can do on-demand. If you need somebody for just a few hours, you can do for a couple days, you can do for a few weeks, or you can do long-term. We have a variety of different clients. People are going on vacation. That's a very common reason. It's very easy. We have mobile apps for iOS and Android devices. So basically, most of the phones on the market, you can quickly tell us your requirements. We take you to a short questionnaire, and we'll match you. We have a proprietary algorithm that matches you with qualified caregivers that fit your requirements, and you can actually watch high-definition videos. And to your question earlier, which is an important problem for people hiring for ethnic parents, for example, who speak a particular language.
Yeah, right.
It was for me. My grandfather only spoke Russian. We have many caregivers who speak different languages, and so part of the high-definition video includes them speaking in that language. So if they have multiple languages, we ask them to deliver part of the message in that language.
That's Ross Kimrovsky, which sounds a little Russian.
Ukrainian.
And Bruce Masterson, thanks both for coming by. It's Respect. Where do people find more information?
At joinrespect.com.
Joinrespect.com. It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Time to talk to Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management. Our regular conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Welcome back to the Business Lunch, young man.
Good to be here, sir.
You know, you probably missed the news this week, but I won the office pool in the NCAA tournament. So
congrats.
I really thought about not coming in today. I'm ready to retire now.
Hey, man, come on down to the office.
How about that? There are probably people who come into windfalls and think, well, I'm golden now. There's nothing else I have to worry about.
That's not really true. It's golden as long as you can hang on to it.
And that's part of the problem. Well, speaking of golden, there's been this great Donald Trump rally that started really the day after the election. Remember, I know you know, the big futures drop on election night.
Oh, yeah.
And then the recovery. And we've hit a bit of a bump over the last 10 days or so, but overall, the indices are up dramatically.
We're close to all-time highs, record highs.
And I would imagine that's obviously it's great news if you are an investor, but it might be, I mean, are you worried about a little false sense of security there too?
Well, anytime the market hits a new high, I and my clients are, just like everybody else in the world, are very happy. But the problem is that we've been going up now for the last 8 years. There hasn't been a serious correction since then. And the clients that we represent, folks in their late 50s to early 60s, they're preparing for retirement. In most cases, Steve, they've got the most money they've ever had in their life.
Yeah.
And the last thing they want to do at this point, this close to retirement, is have any big losses. So every time the market gets to a new high, I'm happy, but I'm also a little bit nervous.
It's interesting you bring that up because I've been reading this week a book by Leslie Stahl, the CBS correspondent from 60 Minutes. She wrote a book about, it's kind of about grandmothering, but it's about grandparents in society these days. And I don't want to misspeak, but it's for the first time ever that the grandparents' age, say 60 to 70, has more income than their kids right now. I think it's 9% higher on average. We're generally, when you were older, you were losing your income
It's
savings.
Not the way today, and it cannot be that way today.
What, explain.
Inflation really hasn't stopped. It doesn't. The cost of your lifestyle does not go down when you retire. At least most of our clients don't want their lifestyle to go backwards. So it's one of the reasons that I get nervous at this stage of rallies is because we like clients to be really transitioning their portfolios more into a pre-retirement mode. And what that means is creating a substantial amount of sustainable, dependable income in their portfolio.
Well, and that's kind of what I meant. I mean, if I said income, I meant wealth or holdings, the fact that they've got more to protect now than previous generations at their age.
But it's always that way. She may find it new for her,
yeah.
But it's always that way. When you retire, you've got more assets than you've ever had in your entire life, for most folks.
Right. Okay. And so what do you do to hold on to them to save it?
Well, you really want to get a good handle on how much risk is in your portfolio. I see portfolios every week, Steve, of folks that come into our office, and I look at them, and they really look like a 30-year-old's portfolio. And a 30-year-old can blow themselves up, and they've got 30 years to make it back again. If you're late 50s to early 60s, you don't have 30 years. So it's really important at this stage to get a really good handle on risk and start transitioning your portfolio into a portfolio that's more age appropriate.
Bill, haven't you read the news? We're going to have tax reform. We're going to have an infrastructure bill. I mean, we're just going to keep going up and up and up.
That's what I heard in the late 90s. That's what I heard in 2007. It was going to go up forever because there's a new rules. And there really aren't ever new rules. Things go in cycles, and you really don't want to be caught in a down cycle at this stage of your life if you're late 50s.
And I suppose when you talk about risk, you're also talking about balance. So if you want to play with a little bit more aggressively, that's okay as long as you're protecting what you need to protect.
Yeah, you basically have two parts of your portfolio, a growth portion of your portfolio and an income portion of your portfolio. And you want to make sure that the risk is lower on both sides of those.
And the growth part is where you can just check the ticker every day and see how you're going up or going down.
Yeah, and be happy, but also be cautious.
Yeah. Well, listen, thanks for coming by. Appreciate
it. My pleasure.
All right, Bill Geiger is here, and we'll talk to Bill again a little bit down the road. Nothing can be more frustrating than working your entire life, saving as much as possible for retirement, and then having no idea how you're going to make your nest egg last 20 or 30 years more. That's where Bill Geiger and Geiger Wealth Management can help. At Geiger Wealth has a special offer today. Bill's going to sit down with you personally to create a full-blown retirement analysis. But folks, this is up to a $3,000 value, complimentary for the next five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for their retirement. Call 800-681-2498. Together with you, Bill is going to translate the complex financial process into easy-to-understand steps with a roadmap to help you get you where you want to be. Call Geiger Wealth Management right now, 800-681-2498. 2498. That's 800-681-2498. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's 12:36. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WG. And thanks very much for listening. I appreciate it. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on my Facebook page, the public page, Steve Bertrand as well. All right. Ian Schur is on a phone line now from CNET. And Ian, welcome back to the Business Lunch. Nice to talk to you.
Absolutely. How are you doing?
Good. Oh, you know, so early in the program, we had on a couple of guys who started a new business about home care for the elderly. And they sort of, you know, it's sort of a tech-based thing where you can follow on your iPhone and things like that. It seems like tech and care, the elderly specifically there, but overall in general is a booming area. And I know that's the series that you guys at CNET have been writing about, right? Tech-enabled?
Yes, it's called Tech Enabled, and it's exactly what you're talking about, how technology is really finally turning from trying to make our lives easier by making it easier for me to order a macchiato to actually making people's lives better, specifically people who are disabled.
There are times when a macchiato is really important, but bigger picture when it comes to helping vets and things like that, I suppose, gets bigger play.
Slightly, right. And so one of the stories we wrote about was we sent a reporter to Virginia and got to look at the assistive technology department in the VA. And it's incredible what they've started doing. You know, we see these kind of Amazon Echo things in our homes, and you've seen probably the ads for the Google one where you can tell it to turn off the lights. There is so much more automation that can be done. And so for people who are like quadriplegics or have been really hurt in war, there are actually technologies now that can allow them to almost fully control their homes with their voices. And it's using all sorts of layering on technologies, from video to voice control to even being able to like control how intense the lighting is. All that stuff is now being able to be done through technology. It's amazing.
Is the VA helping these vets with those things, or are they kind of on their own for it?
It's a mix, right? The VA is definitely helping out in some ways. That's why they're researching this stuff. And the law, actually pushes the VA to look into this stuff as much as they can, right? Which makes total sense. And the VA has been historically on the bleeding edge of a lot of this stuff because they have a segment of the population who needs it, right? People who are hurt in war. So it all makes sense that they're really working on this. And what's really cool, I think, is that it's using some of the technology that you and I have today, right? I have an Alexa in my home but I don't use it to the degree these people are. And it's amazing to see how far it can go and what it can do if I'm willing to put in that effort to get it set up.
Well, you know, it's a good point because I tend to think that Alexa and those things right now are pretty frivolous if you have them around your house. But it's an excellent view of the fact that they're not at all frivolous. And the technology, while we might be using it in a relatively unimportant way, that technology in a more focused way is having a dramatic impact on people who really need it. I've enjoyed that series at CNET called Tech Enabled. Hey, can I change subject a little bit?
Please.
I don't know if it was the last time you were on or a couple times ago. I teased you about not sending me any baby pictures of your son, and then you did. You have got the cutest kid in the world, man. Congratulations on that.
You are very kind. Thank you.
I was showing the pictures around him.
I happen to think he's cute, too.
He is cute. And I know you just started a podcast, and you dealt with – is the podcast going to focus on kids, or did you just focus the first one on kids?
So the podcast is called Status Update, and it's really about how tech is changing the way we raise our kids. Right. So there's a lot of stuff out there about new tech for kids and all of that. What I wanted to focus on is actually how this stuff is changing our lives and changing our kids' lives. Right. Because it's actually the implications of this stuff are really fascinating. And one of the first episodes we had was about photography, which we went into, and really about how not only how the photograph has become so important in our culture. I don't know if you know. 80 billion photos were taken back in the year 2000, according to Kodak. This year, we're expected to surpass 1 trillion with a T.
Oh, my God.
Right? And so think about how much that's changed the way that we interact with each other. I'm never hanging out with family without them pulling out a camera anymore.
But, you know, it's funny you say that, though, Ian. You say that pictures are more important now than they used to be. I would argue just the opposite. I think pictures... Well, I mean, taking pictures is more part of our lives now, but pictures are less in a way because, you know, growing up, I can remember my different pictures. I remember parts of my life by the snapshots of them. The snapshots now are so ubiquitous. There are so many of them that I think we, in many ways, discard them and throw them away, and they don't become sort of a catalog of our life. I don't know. I mean, I think there's an argument in there somewhere.
No, there is. And I think, frankly, I don't think that they've become more important in that individually they're more important, but they are definitely a way that we communicate
everything.
In our culture.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And to the point that Facebook now has photos as one of the primary ways that you are able to post status updates. Snapchat is an entire, $20 billion company built on photography. Like, this is definitely something that it has changed the way that we interact. And what's interesting to me is that there are studies out there being done about how that impacts our memory. For example, there's actually studies out there that say that taking a photo of something during an important moment actually hurts your ability to remember the details from that moment because you're so focused on taking the camera photo. And so there's a lot of stuff like that we really wanted to explore in this podcast episode. And so that's what we tried to do. And it's really a fascinating topic, frankly.
Well, you can't declare that. It was your topic. But it is.
Well, maybe so.
And as listening to it for you as a young dad, it is a struggle to decide when to pick up the camera and when to put it down because I get that your memory would sort of fade if you're missing the moment yourself if you're capturing it. But so many of our memories or moments are renewed by those pictures, too. I don't know. So how are you doing with that personally? Are you living your life behind a camera?
You know, it's been tough. So my wife and I actually debated about whether to even have a camera when she was giving birth.
Yeah.
And we actually dive into that in the podcast. But we decided to agree on just one photo within the first hour of life, which I actually ended up violating. But that's a whole nother story. But for the most part, I've taken about 2,000 images over the last year since he was born. And that's a heck of a lot. It's interesting because you compare that to like my mother, her photo album, I barely have any photos of her. In fact, the first photo that I could find of her was when she was about 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the interesting part to me is that I'm not able to actually reconstruct her life through a photo album the same way that my son's kids will be able to, right?
Yeah, they'll that's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about, because the question is, you know, if you've got few pictures of her, so each of them is more important. If there's so many pictures of your son, you know, will you end up losing the story in all the pages? That's what we'll see. I don't know. We've got a minute left. I want to talk about, because we've talked a lot about, you know, Netflix and programming and all of that. Amazon made some news now where I can watch NFL football with my Amazon Prime Video account, right? That's a big move.
It's a huge move and a $50 million move. you know, it's interesting. The Amazon, you don't think of for streaming video that much. I mean, they have some shows like Transparent and a couple of others, and they are pretty highly rated. But
I'm big on Patriot right now. Patriot. Right, exactly. I'm big on that one, yeah.
Exactly. So there are some, but most people still think of Amazon. They think of buying the, you know, the Cheerios and having the delivery to their home. So for the interesting thing here is that they are pushing heavy now. I mean, $50 million to have the streaming rights to Thursday night football games. And they actually stole it away from Twitter, who did it last year.
Yeah.
They paid $10 million. So think about, it's already multiplied by five in just a year in terms of the value that they're able to get for it. And it's a real sign that Amazon's pushing hard into the video streaming business, and we're going to hear them a lot more, I think.
Well, and the good news is there's an extra $40 million for the NFL, so I'm sure our ticket prices are going to go down.
Yeah, right. Good luck with that.
Ian, sure. You can read more at CNET.com. Nice to talk to you again, bud.
My pleasure.
Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is 12:51. All right, it's April 6th, so most colleges maybe have about a month, 5 weeks left. Then comes the graduation season when all we talk about are the commencement addresses and all of that. The kids then have to go out and they got to find a job, or maybe they're finding a job now. Elise Glink, who is no stranger, she gives like 6, 7, 8 commencement addresses every year. she joins us on a phone line now. Have you given a commencement address?
I haven't in a long time. I've given one.
And how did it go? Were you okay? Would people pay attention?
You know, I was so focused on not tripping over my words that I have no idea who was sleeping through it, but probably most were.
C. Everett Koop, who was the Surgeon General at the time, gave the commencement address for my college graduation. So think of that, the Surgeon General talking about different ways not to die. It wasn't a very uplifting address.
Right. He's an interesting character.
He was a transformative character. He truly was. Yeah. Okay. So the good news now is that the unemployment rate continues to drop, and people who are graduating come May probably have a pretty good shot at getting a job.
They do. The unemployment rate for new college graduates is running under 4% now, about 3.8%, 3.9%. And when you graduate into a decent economy, which is where we are now, your first job can pay anywhere from $3,000 to $4,000 more a year than people who graduated, let's say, in 2009, 10, 11,
right.
12, and even 13. And what's nice about that is this is a gift that keeps on giving, right? So every year,
exactly.
Your salary goes up from that higher level.
Well, you know, I was thinking of that when I found out we were going to talk about this. What a jump start, or what a hindrance if you do it in a bad economy, but what a jump start that is, because you're right, it's not just year one. You've now started with a base salary that presumably will continue to grow. The other side of it is that you've started with a real salary. You're not waiting a year or 2 years to maybe get into your field.
Right. It's salary, and it's also benefits and other kinds of perks that go with the job. And so for people who are new college graduates, that's the good news. The bad news for them is that they're graduating with the highest levels of debt ever, somewhere between $34,000 and $37,000 on an average basis, which just, you know, at 6, 7% interest or even 5 or 6% interest is a lot of money that you're paying every single month to get rid of that debt.
Okay, that's one way to look at that. That's a lot of money, but this is what shocked me in a way. The New York Fed says that $34,000 average is 70% more than it was just 10 years ago. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, that's a remarkable number. So we hear a lot about how college tuition goes up at a rate of between 7 and 10% a year. And that's hard to even imagine, but if you think about the rule of 72 in investing, which is if something goes up 10% a year, it only takes 7 years to double. right? So you're actually seeing this play out in real time. I mean, we like to think of it more about our holdings and how they grow over that period of time. But when you're thinking about how much college tuition costs, it's just frightening, yeah. And most people are financing that.
Here's the thing. Aristotle hasn't changed since 10 years ago. It shouldn't cost that much more to teach my kid about him.
You would think, but those professors really like to get raises and benefits and bonuses, too.
I see. So Aristotle's getting nothing out of it.
He, unfortunately, has fallen into the public domain. So, no, there are no royalties associated with it. But
And the Aristotelians around the world are ticked about that.
Well, they're going to have to get in line. But when you look at kind of how the student debt is playing out in the public debate, about 1/6 of all student loans are going to go bad. They're just never going to be repaid. And then there's another chunk of student loans, maybe another as much as another quarter, that are paid late regularly. And by paying late, we mean more than 90 days late. So you run into a situation with millennials, who are the ones who are graduating now. They're 22 years old. But even up to 37, which is kind of the oldest age of the millennials, you're watching people in real time have their credit destroyed because their Social Security numbers are linked to those debts. And the more, even if you just pay one thing late for 2 years, that can negatively impact your credit history and credit score.
No kidding. So if you're struggling, or maybe you're not struggling, maybe you're just getting by, another way of struggling.
Right.
But the key is that if your intention is, well, I'm going to pay it, but not for a couple of weeks, pay it now if you can, because it could haunt you for a long, long time.
Right. It's really important to get on top of it. And if you are taking a full-time job and it doesn't pay you enough to get your student debt in order, you really need to call your lender right away and try and work out a payment plan or do some sort of consolidation where you can lower the interest rate or extend the term. I really don't like it when people have to extend the term of any loan, because you're just adding thousands of dollars in interest over the life. And suddenly a 10-year loan, which is what all student loans are, is typically 10 years, that 10-year payoff turns into a 30-year payoff. And now you're just talking about a mortgage.
Yeah. Elise Glink, thanks for joining us today. And we'll work on that. Everyone call your kids. Tell them to pay their loans.
Sounds good.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Elise is the publisher of ThinkGlink.com and the CEO of Best Money Moves. It's an HR app for businesses that helps their employees sort of manage their financial stress, dial it down. You can find out more about that at thinkglink.com.